We're exploring a new essay collection that explores generations around Lake Halley in Chippewa County and life in a tight-knit lake community on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So just to help put it in perspective, author Patty C. writes, at 79 acres, Lake Halley is so small, they loop around in the pontoon twice just to feel like they've been somewhere. Join in on Lake Life in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. Resident Patty C., her new book is called Here on Lake Halley in Praise of Barflies, Fix-It Guys, and Other Folks in Our Hometown. It's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Patty is an academic advisor and senior lecturer at UW-Eau Claire. Patty, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here and talk about Lake Halley.
I love that you said that you received the greatest compliment from your neighbor, Helen. No one loves Lake Halley like Patty.
Yeah, that was quite sweet.
Oh, I love
coming from her.
Who has lived on the lake apparently like for, I don't know, 70 some years?
That's right. Almost 80 years. That's right. She moved here with her family when she was 6 years old. And her father was Clark Hughes, who was an entrepreneur and a farmer. So Helen grew up here. And when she got married, her father set her up on a lot and a trailer home. And that's where she's lived ever since.
So I'm trying to picture this lake. Helen is across from you on the lake. Can you give us can you acquaint us with the lake itself?
Sure. Yeah. Do you want me to go way back and give you the history of Lake Halley?
If it helps, absolutely.
Sure. Well, it's a man-made lake, and Lake Halley was essentially dug by Blue Mills in 1843, and that was a lumber mill, and it was built, right now it's across the street from the Chippewa River. But back then, I'm sure there was a field. And so it was just a holding pond for logs. That mill burnt down. And then the land was bought by the Badger State Lumber Company. And another mill, Badger Mills, was built right there. And they produced 15 million feet of lumber a year. And when it shut down, because, of course, everywhere in Wisconsin and the Midwest, we ran out of logs. The owner, John Orr Jr., had a vision to name the holding pond and turn it into a park. And so he created Midway Park. So we're all that, there are 27 houses on Lake Halley today and a few more going up. But where all of the houses were, there were cabins, there was a pavilion, and eventually there was a hotel, and above Lake Halley, a baseball park and drill grounds. And so that park eventually became Electric Park, which closed down in 1925. All the land surrounding Lake Halley was bought by NSP. And then Helen's father, Clark Hughes, entrepreneur, he bought up all of the land and he developed it. Hmm. And so that's how the houses came to be on Lake Halley.
I love that you can just call up the neighbor and not say who it is. And you just say, you know, go to the window, look out at the lake.
Yes, exactly. Well, one of the things you have to envision is that where I live, the length, or I should say the width of Lake Halley is about the length of a basketball court. So we can yell across the lake, everything, my neighbors, Marion and Dave, Larry and Helen can see, I can see just at a slightly different angle. And I'm also married to a retired dude who grew up in the city in Boston, and he just loves to literally, he sits and looks out the window pretty much all day. He works at the counter as a writer. He looks out the window. He pays attention to what's going on. And yeah, he also will call neighbors and say, did you see this?
I think we should give Bruce a name here. Let's call him by it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Bruce Taylor.
Oh dear. And then you get the emails at your work during the day, and it's like you should be putting your stuff down and just running home to see whatever is going on Lake Halley.
That's exactly right. Yes. The first fall we lived here, we moved in September 2010. And every time Bruce spotted an eagle, or he just was out of his mind the first time he saw otters. And, you know, I grew up coming out to this lake because I'm best friends with Helen. So I've been coming to Lake Halley since I was about 6 years old. And yes, I'm impressed by wildlife. I love to see eagles fishing. I love to see great heron. But yeah, I'm not going to drop everything and come home just because there's an otter family.
Talking about the new essay collection here on Lake Halley with author Patty C. You can join in on what inspires you about your lake community and what friendships thrive around it. What have you learned from your neighbors? 800-642-1234. Another thing is winter on Lake Halley. Oh my goodness, there's that one winter where your driveway being so steep, you couldn't park there, so you could not get to work. So you're parking in Helen's driveway, walking across the lake in the sub-zero, you know, winter. But I suppose that's just part of it, huh?
It is. Yeah, we have a very steep, oh, it's probably an eighth of a mile driveway. And so for a while, I was just parking. At that point, we had a Mini Cooper. We should not live here and not have at least all-wheel drive, we discovered. But we had a Mini Cooper, so we parked it at the top. And every morning, I would walk up to the top of the driveway just to get out. And I realized it's probably a shorter distance to walk across the frozen lake to Helen's house. And then, of course, sweet Helen offered to start my car every morning. So I would get to a warm car, and she also would leave me treats on the passenger seat. So she often would leave me little containers of cookies or bars, and it just was so wonderful.
Oh, I love that story as well. And, you know, you gave me new appreciation for people who are on septic. You know, you can't take flushing for granted. You have to really stay organized about that. And you're still on septic. That's right. Huh?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Well, not just septic. My husband Bruce and I know so much about septic systems now since we moved here. Our first year here, our septic system failed. So we had to put in a new septic system. And because we're so close to the lake, we had to put in septic tanks. So there, you know, you get to 2,000 gallons and you have to get it pumped or it backs up in your basement. So it's not a septic field, which a lot of the houses around here and a lot of rural communities' houses have septic fields, but we have a finite amount of waste. So yes, we measure everything that goes down the drain. So a lot of my gray water, when I wash dishes, I throw my water over the balcony, and I have a series of rocks set up so I don't erode the land. And yeah, we have quite the setup.
Have you seen much climate change on Lake Halley over the years? What have you noticed?
We have noticed extreme wind and extreme rain. So, and part of it might be living in town and then living out here, we're kind of in a bit of a tunnel. And so it doesn't just rain, it seems. We just get torrential rains. And in the wind, particularly the last year or so, winter and summer, spring, the winds have been just unbelievable. Hmm. I don't know that I had ever seen whitecaps on Lake Halley, and we have seen them recently. And you mentioned my pontoon. So Lake Halley is a no-wake lake. So when we got a pontoon, we went with just a trolling electric motor. So it's about, you know, I don't know, I go 1 mile per hour. And honestly, kayaks do pass us by. And so if it's windy, I can go in one direction perfectly, but coming back that other direction, I have actually gotten stuck and had to just pull off to the opposite shore and just wait. I couldn't get home, so...
Author Patty C. has dozens of these stories, dozens of essays in her new book about her lake community in Chippewa County, her family. Join in on Lake Halley, the things you love about lake life, pontoons, bird watching, otters, your lake, colorful characters. 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show with author Patty C. here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring a new essay collection about lake life on tiny Lake Halley that is brimming with heart and history. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Author Patty C. lives on the lake in this funky two-story cabin that she writes resembled a wedding cake with a tear sliding slightly to one side. Moved to rural Lake Halley in 2010. Join in on your reflections of lake living and what you want to know about Lake Halley that was created about 180 years ago as a holding pond. 800-642-1234. The book is called Here on Lake Halley. Patty with us for the hour. Patty, let's explore one of your essays on handymen. For all the handymen I've loved, chronicling all the fix-it guys you've been grateful for during your life, why pay tribute to them? Oh, are you there, Patty?
I'm there, but I had trouble hearing you. Could you repeat that question?
Oh, sure. So we're going to explore one of your essays about the fix-it guys and all of the handymen you've been grateful for during your life. Can you go into that essay?
Sure, absolutely. It's really one of my favorite essays. It's so close to my heart. And my father was a fix-it guy. He was self-taught, a lot of trial and error, and I'm sure a ton of swearing. He taught my brothers. I witnessed all of that. I always helped out. I wouldn't say I'm exactly a fix-it gal, but I can do some things. And so I was doing a column for the Leader Telegram, and I wanted to do something different for Valentine's Day. And I was thinking about all the fix-it guys I've loved. So it's really an ode to so many different fix-it guys I've had. And after my dad died, I had so many moments of thinking, well, I can't break that because I've got nobody to fix it. Oh, I can't run over my extension cord when I'm using my electric lawnmower because there's no one to fix it. And so my nephew, Mitch, I call him M in the essay, is just a very wonderful man. And he is also self-taught. So my dad taught my brother, Dave, and Dave taught his son, Mitch. And so when I needed some work done during, I guess, the first winter of COVID, I reached out to Mitch, and I knew that he had the skills to do what I wanted him to do, but he just is non-committal, is what I'll say. So he would say, yeah, I can look at that. And then, of course, he'd come over and he would do a great job. And it just was a sweet scene. So one of the things that I love about being a nonfiction writer is I just have to pay attention to my life, and often stories come to me. And that's one example. So I have my dad's ancient level that I put over my door frame in my office so I can see it. And it reminds me of how I want my life to be, level and plumb. And Mitch saw that and he said, oh, was that grandpa's? Like, why, yes, it is. And Mitch reminds me so much of my dad. He's his stature and his looks a little bit, but just the way he talks. And as I was walking Mitch through my house, I wanted him to lay a cork floor in my office and do a few other things. And he talked through the whole thing. Well, what a guy should do. That's exactly what my dad used to say. And it just was so touching to me. And Mitch, of course, I don't think he was aware of all of the connections.
That is so beautiful. I would love it if you would give us a fuller portrait of your family. 8 kids, 1 bathroom. Your dad raised all of you on a railroad worker's salary.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Well, both of my parents grew up on farms. They were used to skimping and saving. They both were children during the Depression. And of course, that influenced them for the rest of their lives. So we grew up in a house with 1 bathroom. I think maybe right before I was born in 1968, my dad put a stool in the basement. So the boys would go in the basement, but all of the girls got to be in the bathroom. And so with that many children, somebody would be brushing their teeth, somebody would be in the bathtub, and somebody would be sitting on the toilet. And that's just what we did. And my mom was phenomenal about making something out of nothing, just making food last and clothes last and looking for a bargain and they grew so much of our food. We lived in town, but they had a double lot. And so they grew just a ton of our food, and my mom canned and my dad hunted. And so we ate a lot of squirrel.
And the squirrel, you had these little, you know, dishes on the table where you could pick the hair out of your teeth and put them on little plates.
It's one of the many things I think a lot of us might look back and think, that's really gross. Did you really do that? But yes, there were hair plates on the table because apparently squirrel are so, so difficult to clean. It's impossible to get all of the hair off. So I've run into a couple of people when I've done readings and I've read that piece, and that piece appeared on public radio, and people have written to me that, oh yeah, we had hair plates too.
Talking about the book here on Lake Halley, author Patty C. taking us through the stories, the people, the connection. Join in on Lake Life, what you have seen, 800-642-1234. Oh, Patty, when you sold the home after your dad passed away, I was so moved that you wrote in permanent marker on that attic beam, the seas 1953 to 2020. How difficult was that to let go of the place you grew up and all those memories there?
Yes, it was really, really hard. And my parents were not hoarders, but they were savers. And so part of processing our grief was going through so much of their stuff. And about a week before my dad died, he had bone cancer, and we kept him home until the last few days. And he knew he was going to die, and he got really teary. And he said, "You won't get a dumpster when I die, will you?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "Absolutely not. The only reason we'd get a dumpster is because my sisters and I would love to dive in it and take everything else out." So there are 8 siblings, and there are maybe, it's probably half and half of not hoarders, but savers. And I'm one of the savers. I treasure things. And then there are neatniks who you walk into their house and there is no clutter, and they are not savers. They're not those people who have those sentimental things. And so, no, I promised him, of course we wouldn't. And so that was hard, letting all of the stuff go, but I also love to give things away. And so we had a thrift sale and sold much of my parents' treasures. But then the funnest for me, we had a free for all. So I put a notice on Craigslist that everything is free. 93-year-old died. He wants his treasures to go to good homes. And we just sat back and watched, and it just was phenomenal. And people were wonderful. This woman came up to me and put her arm around me and said, "I'm sorry for your loss, girl." And I looked, I had sunglasses on, and I looked at her face carefully. Do I know her? No, she was a complete stranger. And she just came to get some of my dad's treasures. Oh. And I just had to trust that, you know, my dad's treasures and mom's treasures would go to good homes. So that was hard. And then letting go of the house, yes, was hard. The young couple who bought the house actually has a connection to my family. And I didn't realize that until much later by happenstance. So during the pandemic, I was calling the boat center to get my pontoon because, you know, for those first days or first weeks of lockdown, we couldn't do anything. And I was so eager to get my pontoon. And I talked to this Jake guy on the phone, and finally he said, "Are you the C's from 617 Harding Street?" Like, yeah, you know, what is he trying to sell me something? And he said, "I live there now." Like, what? And then he told me who his mom was, and she actually grew up down the street. So when Jake and his girlfriend looked at the house, their mom went through the house and said, "Oh, this is a beautiful house." And she told them the history of the house and the family. And so that really makes me feel better, just knowing that there's some connection, and Jake told me how much they adore the house. So that also makes me feel better.
I love that too. And it just reminds me of how everyone perhaps knows someone else's cousin or, you know, or neighbor. There are so many connections in that community.
Absolutely. Yes. So, So I grew up in Chippewa Falls, which is right next to Lake Halley, but really it's all part of the same community. And I used to joke, and then I wrote about how it's one tapestry, and you pull one thread, and you know, something happens to your cousin's work friend's brother, and we're all connected.
That is my favorite, absolute favorite line of the book, author Patty C. And we're spending the hour with her on her new collection of essays that revolve around Lake Halley in Chippewa County. Join in on tight-knit Wisconsin Lake communities, what you've learned, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Newsday Update is next here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring a new essay collection about life on Lake Halley in Chippewa County. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. One of my favorite lines from Patty C's book, it goes like this. I am reminded again how we are all connected in Chippewa Falls like an intricate tapestry. Pull one thread and your neighbor's cousin frays a bit. Don't you just love that? Maybe you could replace Chippewa with the name of your lake community. Join in 800-642-1234. Patty is spending the hour with us, her essay collection called Here on Lake Halley. Gus in Altoona, you have something to say about Lake Halley. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. My father passed away last July, but he was a staple out on the Lake Halley. He would go fishing on the weekdays to avoid the amateurs, and he would be out there fishing in the morning, just, you know, while they were biting. And a few times my friends would tell me, oh, yeah, we saw your dad out there fishing, Ron was fishing. And, you know, it just reminds me, and your saver story, too, because my father was a super saver. So he, you know, he just did things a little economically. You know, it was a close lake and good fishing for panfish.
You know, so I was going to ask you, Gus, what was your dad fishing for? What was he bringing in?
You know, just panfish, like sunfish, or I don't know if you got any crappies there, but just that, yeah.
How many years did he have, time on the lake? Was it kind of a, would he go back there often?
Yeah, I mean, he went around to other lakes too, Lake Wissota.
Oh, Gus, I think we just lost you there for a moment. Let's bring Patty back in. You know, Patty, Gus is talking about his dad, who used to do a lot of fishing on Lake Halley, who was also a saver. What about the fishing?
Oh, yeah, the fishing is great here. So panfish in the summer. A lot of kids fish here. It's really a neighborhood lake, because it's accessible by the boat landing. There's a public boat landing, the Clark Hughes boat landing. It's named after Helen Sebaska, the neighbor I talked about. So a lot of people come and fish right there. There's a handicap accessible pier. And so a lot of kids, families come. There are a lot of kayakers. People fish from kayaks. So in the summer, a lot of panfish, but winter fishing, oh, so many northern. And my neighbor Larry across the lake, he walks out, he measures the ice for me, or for himself, but also I watch him, and I know if Larry walks out there, then I can walk on the ice. And so I went out to take his picture one winter, early December, and he had a line in the water, and he caught like a 36, 37 inch northern. And I just could not believe it. I kind of jostled my camera. I just was so shocked. But we see big fish like that come out of the lake, particularly in winter. And so, yep, it's just a fun lake to fish.
Oh, I appreciate that story. And I'm also fascinated by you speaking of the ice, you building fires on ice. How do you build those bonfires out on Lake Halley and the ice not melting?
Right. Absolutely. Well, I mentioned that my husband is a city kid. So when I told him our first winter here, I was going to have a bonfire on ice, he was so concerned. But the heat rises. So even if you have 4 inches of ice, and I think when I built the fire, there were at least 6 inches or 8 inches of ice. but the heat rises. So it doesn't actually melt the ice. And I grew up building fires on ice. It's just, it's really, really fun. And
you love fire. You just got it. You have to say it. You got to state it.
I am a fire bug. That is correct. Yes. Yes. All of my family, we all are fire bugs. Yes. I can talk about that a little bit later, but I to placate Bruce, I told him I would build the fire close to shore. So if we did break through ice, all we would have to do is stand up. So that's where we built the first fire. And ever since then, I've gotten further out.
Let's bring on another caller, Ellen in Cedarburg. Ellen, hi.
Hi. Hi. This is a wonderful subject. I'm going to love reading those essays. We were lucky enough, there were five of us kids in our family, and we were lucky enough to come up every summer to a cottage on a tiny lake. I won't name it, but just a tiny lake an hour west of Milwaukee. I was a nature girl, and we were coming from Chicago, so I lived for the summers. We'd take our shoes off. I'd say, you know, at the beginning of summer, and except for Mass on Sunday, we wouldn't put them back on again. And I made so many wonderful discoveries in nature, you know, flowers and of course, playing with the other kids on the lake. And I also, my environmentalist side was awakened very early by this was a spring-fed lake with natural marsh areas, and people came up and bought the property and filled in those marshes. And I watched the life inside those marshes flow out of the little channels, and I learned early how humans can be so destructive. But overall, that time of my life has remained exquisitely precious to me. I'm still a lover of nature, and I just feel so lucky.
Oh, Ellen, thank you for sharing such a beautiful story about your lake experiences. Patty, what comes up for you?
Well, Ellen, thank you for sharing that. I think about something called Blue Mind. It's a book by Wallace Nichols about the surprising science, how being near, in, on, or underwater can make you happier, healthier, and more connected. And it sounds, Ellen, like that's what you were experiencing. And I certainly experienced that myself. I've always been drawn to water. And as a kid, like you, we wouldn't go to a cabin, but my family and I would camp at various lakes throughout Wisconsin. And it was those were some of my favorite times. I really appreciate what you said about how humans move in and they think it's progress. But I appreciate too that the DNR really is aware of preserving lakes in Wisconsin. And so Lake Hallie is also spring fed, and the healthy nature of this lake, I think, is in part because of all of the people who live on Lake Hallie who are so concerned about it, but also working in partnership with the DNR.
Could you read a bit from Get Your Blue Mind On? You
sure.
Have the essay there in front of you, I think. Can you
I
set
do
a,
indeed,
yes,
yeah.
Set us up a bit.
Sure, absolutely. So I take the title from Wallace Nichols' book title, Blue Mind. And so my son was a college student and was watching a Packers game and thought it seemed like a good idea, a Packers game in a bar, mind you. He thought it was a good idea to bid on this 1987 24-foot pontoon, not really thinking he was going to get it. Well, he got it. And so he fixed it up, and while he was a college student in Eau Claire, he used it in the summer, and then he went away to military training, he put the boat in storage, and then he got a job in the desert and never really took the pontoon out of storage. So he convinced me that I should buy this pontoon from him. He gave me a great deal, and I mentioned the trolling motor, so it had something like a 60-70 horsepower motor, and we sold that and put on a 1 horsepower trolling motor. And so having a pontoon on Lake Hallie has just been such a gift. And during the pandemic, I called it the party barge or patty barge, because we could socially distance and still see friends and family outside. But this piece is pre-pandemic. It's called Get Your Blue Mind On, and it's about my best friend Karen and I, and about Helen, who you've heard about before. One late afternoon, Karen and I lumber along in my pontoon, the Joe C. Even kayakers pass us by. At 79 acres, Lake Halley is so small, we loop around twice just to feel like we've been somewhere. As we pass Karen's childhood home, her mom comes out to see us. Helen stands in the yard, barefoot and waving. "Want a ride?" Karen yells. "No," her mom calls back. Still, Helen walks closer to shore. She recently gave me the greatest compliment. No one loves Lake Halley like Patty. That's something coming from an 80-year-old who's lived on this lake for 74 years. Karen yells to her, "Meet us on Larry's dock." Helen does. Karen helps her mom aboard. I steer us over to where Helen grew up, the farm her parents bought in 1946. Helen still owns the dilapidated barn, the oldest structure on Lake Halley. We drift past the Clark Hughes boat landing, named for her dad who donated the land. Helen tells us she can't remember the last time she cruised the lake. It's been decades or more. At sunset, we take in the spectacular view of her old homestead from the middle of Lake Halley. I can see in Helen's eyes what none of us has to say.
Thank you so much for that passage. And, you know, I envy your long relationships, especially with your best friend Karen there on the pontoon, growing up from elementary school, still friends together now. What does that mean to have those really long relationships that aren't your kin, that aren't family?
Right. Yeah. Well, speaking of gifts, I think that's one of the greatest gifts in my life, that that I've not only known Karen since I was 6 years old, but that we still talk almost every day. We're both, I'm going to be 54 soon. She's already 54. She'd love for me to point that out. And so we're going on almost 50 years of friendship. And all of these years we've been together, we joke about all the bad haircuts and big hair. I still kind of have big hair and bad plaid and stonewashed denim and all the boyfriends we've gone through and husbands and children. And so we've just always been connected. And so because of Lake Halley, of course, we'll continue to be best friends, but we're also going to be neighbors. And so we'll likely be together until we die. Karen and her husband are in the process of building a house on Lake Halley on one of the lots that her grandfather owned. Mm. So we joke about creating a zip line so we can get to each other faster across the lake.
Author Patty C., born and raised Chippewa Falls on Lake Halley since 2010, new essay collection, so many memories, a pondering life in a tight-knit community, writer in a cabin on Lake Halley. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're making space for humorous and heartfelt essays about small-town life in the Chippewa Valley, childhood memories growing older around tiny Lake Halley. Still time to talk about small communities and lake life you've known. 800-642-1234. Patty C.'s new collection of dozens of essays published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. And with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's... Patty, you know, there's something that comes up, I think, early on in the essay collection when a minivan falls through the ice in winter, and you're watching that from your window. And I know it's kind of morbid, but the person doesn't die. But can you explain what happens when a car does fall through ice?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I didn't actually see that happen. I just saw the aftermath. And so that happened, a young man was at the bar at Sportsman's Club, and you can access driving onto Lake Halley from the boat landing, though there is a big warning that there are springs and that there's an aerator being used. So the fish are oxygenated, but this young man still went out. It was after bar time, and he was doing donuts, and he slid to the edge near the shore where the springs are, and he just went through the ice. And so instinctively he opened his door, but sadly he had a dog in the back of the van and he couldn't get the dog out. So the dog did die. And fortunately the man was able to get out. He walked about a mile. So he walked past a lot of houses and he walked back to the bar and he knocked on the window, and the bartender fortunately was still working doing close up chores. And otherwise I'm sure this poor man would have frozen to death. He was completely wet. His hair was covered in icicles. And so it was quite a spectacle to see the van come out of the water. And so originally the crew was going to use our land. So I live on a very steep bank. And so they were going to try to bring that van up the steep bank. And then finally they decided that they would use Helen's land. And so the van had to be pulled across the lake once it was out of the water. And it's a huge production. So scuba divers go in, they break out the back window, they put a beam through the back window, and it looked to me like a popsicle stick through a matchbox car. And then they winch it up and they get everything stabilized. And the first thing they did once they had the van stabilized is they brought the dog out and they wrapped the poor dog in a tarp and put it on the ice until the end of the day. This was like a 12-hour episode of, just a lot of work to get this out. And because it was so cold that February, once the van went in, the ice froze over the top of it. So they actually had to chainsaw through the ice, and then the divers went in, and it just was such a spectacle. Unfortunately, I had to work. So I had my husband watching with binoculars. I had my best friend, Karen, was right down there watching in the flesh. She would take pictures. She would send me the pictures at work in Eau Claire, and then I would forward them to my brother in Chippewa Falls, who's a retired firefighter and was so interested in being able to see this happen. And then he would show up and watch a little bit with Bruce. And then there was a lot of downtime, and my brother Joe would go back home. And it was sort of hilarious. And of course, that could only happen in a contemporary society where you had smartphones to take photos and send to back and forth.
And just dragging it across the ice, they flipped it on, I guess they flipped it over and they were dragging the minivan on its top. Is that right?
That is correct. That is correct. And I honestly don't know the science behind that, but it might be that that's how they could best get it out of the lake, the wheels up, so the wheels wouldn't catch on the edge of the ice slip where they chainsawed through. And I was so curious. I wrote about this, obviously, and I published this as a column in the Leader Telegram. And so I pieced together the story from neighbors because, of course, it's a small community and everybody knows everything. I think of it as the Twilight bark from the 101 Dalmatians. If one neighbor knows, and then, we all get the info. So I wanted to get the story before I actually wrote about it in the local paper. And so one February late afternoon, I walked from where I knew the van went in to the bar, Sportsman's Club, just to see what that was like in cold weather. I wasn't, wet and my hair wasn't frozen. And I talked to the bartender who I knew and asked him if he would tell me what he knew, said I was going to write about it. I knew the driver's name, but I wasn't going to mention the name. And I sat down and was drinking beer next to this guy I'd never seen before. And I didn't ask him any questions, but he told me, I don't know anything about it. I said, oh, okay. And then we had about three beers and he opened up about everything he knew about it because he was at the bar the night that the driver got the bright idea to go do donuts. And this guy said, it's a bad idea. Don't do it. You're going to regret it. And of course,
regret it. Mm. Yeah. How about we take another call? Pam in Boulder Junction is with us. Pam, hi. What can you bring up?
Hi. I just am really enjoying this. We spend our summers at a seasonal campground up in Boulder Junction, Wisconsin. And this is my dream when I retire, to be able to get up in the morning and look out at a calm lake, have my campfires in the evening by the lake shore. And it's a, just a little 40-acre lake. So like Lake Halley, it's a no-wake lake. And I love to go out with my paddleboard and not have to worry about getting mowed down by jet skiers or water skiers. About the only thing that might disrupt my serenity is a pair of loons popping up next to my paddleboard and again surprising me. But I think I appreciate it even more because we lived in California for 10 years. And in California, the majority of the lakes, unless you get up in the Sierra Nevada, are these huge reservoirs. Mm. And most of those, they don't even allow swimming. And I just missed my water so much that getting back to Wisconsin where, you know, you drive a mile or two and you're going to see a lake or a stream or at least a pond, I just feel like I'm back in my water element again.
Oh, I appreciate that so much, Pam. In your element. Patty, you are in your element, too, and in our last moments here together.
Yes, and Pam, I share your retirement dream. I mean, happily, I'm living it right now. And I've also, as I've said, been so drawn to water. I just feel really blessed to be able to, I'm going to die here. No question about it. Hopefully in maybe 50 years, but I'm going to die here.
We only have a few moments left. Does being near the water help you become a more prolific writer? Does it help with writing?
I would like to say yes, but I don't think that's true. I think that every writer would tell you that they're going to write no matter where they are.
Yeah.
And I think it's ideal to think that I look out the window and then I write these wonderful things. And that's not really the way it works. The way it works for me is that I get an idea. I talk to people. I sketch out my idea. I do a lot of research. Mm-hmm. That doesn't sound very, very interesting or cosmopolitan, but I do a lot of research for my pieces, even pieces that I think I know about. And so I thought I'd known so much about Lake Halley and Chippewa Falls and even about my ancestors. But until I started to research, I didn't get the full story. So,
Patty, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was so fun.
Patty C's book here on Lake Halley in praise of barflies, fix-it guys, other folks in our hometown. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.